Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 293 of Bad Flips and Maple Dips. I'm Patrick, he's Justin, and we're back. Man, a series win against the Yankees always feels great.
Yeah, three series wins at home, too. All three. Which is good.
That's right, which means the team went 6-3.
Yeah, right? They're now above 500 as well, which is always nice.
10-9 is not too bad considering how difficult the first month of the season schedule is.
And how shitty the offense was for the first 2 weeks of the year, and still sometimes is.
Yeah, when we have more time to do an episode, we'll sink our teeth into the analysis of how the team is performing at the plate without runners and with runners. Spoiler alert.
It's not good.
Yeah, not great. But we're not going to talk about that today because we don't have a lot of time. We're just going to kind of recap some of the stuff that's in the news. And then we're just going to talk about the Yankees series a little bit. And then we're going to preview the series against the Padres. And we might chat a tiny bit about the Royals, but I think we'll be back before then. So without any sort of further rumblings about umpire quality and all of that other stuff, thanks for taking the time to listen to us. You can find us on the internet. BFMDpodcast.com is the website, and then that's our Twitter handle too, minus the .com. Justin, what's the news?
The news, Patrick, is light this week because we know that, and we'll talk about all three of them, but Denny Jansen, Jordan Romano, and Eric Swanson all came back for this series at some point in time. The only remaining notable Blue Jays on that are injured, and one of them is on the IL, is Alek Manoah, who's going to make another rehab start for Triple A Buffalo tomorrow, Friday, April the 19th. As we know, his first couple of rehab starts haven't went great. His second one was better in terms of command, but he still got roughed up in terms of hits and runs allowed. But we'll see if he can continue to improve. The other guy that is doing some rehab is Joey Votto. He is doing light hitting work, but his ankle is still not ready for game action. What was initially thought to be like a couple of day thing has now turned into like a month thing. So hopefully Votto can get into some games in the minors soon and maybe push somebody like a Daniel Vogelbach, who I know Patrick doesn't like on the roster, off of the major league roster. But we'll get to that at some point when Votto is producing enough to make the point. So
I'll clarify that my main issue is that sometimes it feels like this organization impedes the development of younger players for the sake of like immediate gains. And I don't always agree with that decision. I don't want to chat about Vogelbach any more than that. Anyway, whatever. Alek Manoah is starting tomorrow is interesting. It's Paolo Espino tonight for the Bisons in their game. I think it starts in about 50 minutes time from right now. And actually, the Bisons are doing well. Believe it or not, tonight they are
because they're slugging.
Yeah, they're playing Columbus tonight. So Buffalo is 9-7. So despite the fact that their pitching has been dubious, the Buffalo Bisons have, like you said, they've been hitting the snot out of the ball. Specifically, Aurelvis Martinez, who started off the year quite slow, has come around now and has been quite impressive. I hadn't planned on doing a Buffalo Bisons report, but we're going to do it now.
Here you are.
Will Robertson is still rocking a 1.413 OPS.
That's pretty good.
It's very strong. Mm-hmm. He's got four home runs already this year, which leads the team.
How many walks does he have? Last time he had a ton. Last time I checked, he was.
He has nine walks to nine strikeouts, which is incredible, but dwarfed by Spencer Horowitz's 18 walks to nine strikeouts. Not much to say. Both Robertson and Horowitz and Barger and Aurelvis. And I would even throw in Damiano Palmigiani. Yeah. I would throw him into the list of dominance. And Nathan Lucas is also performing quite well, too. A lot of strikeouts, not a lot of walks, Lucas, but he's making outstanding contact, and he's driven in 11 runs already. But the main thing I want to talk about today is just Orelvis, who had a very slow start to the year. But now he has an 11-game hitting streak, and his batting average is already up to .296 with an .875 OPS. Not as many dingers to start the year. He's about two off his pace of 30 a season in the minor leagues. But Orelvis, and he's playing second base, so I don't know, man. You might see Orelvis at second base like next year or late this year, depending on injuries. That's kind of crazy.
Definitely possible.
It's low probable because they'll want him to get as many at-bats as possible in the minor leagues.
It really makes me wish they hadn't signed IKF for 2 years. I don't hate having IKF on the team because he's playing pretty well, but yeah. I'm surprised that they did 2 years. That's all.
But it's going to push
about.
It's going to push the situation with the extra roster spot that's currently occupied by Daniel Vogelbach, because next year you're going to have the fight between Orelvis, Addison Barger, Will Robertson, and Spencer Horowitz all for at least one spot.
Yeah, if we just look at guys who may not be back next year, you could look at, like, obviously Justin Turner is up in the air because he's getting old. Kevin Kiermaier on a one-year deal and not hitting well yet. Vogelbach's a guy who may not be back. Those are kind of the three roster spots there. And, I mean, if there's no Turner and no Vogelbach, I would open a spot for, say, a Horwitz to play first base backup.
That's the other thing, too.
Will Robertson in the outfield, maybe. So,
my question, though, is what the team plans to do with Cabin Biggio in the long term. Now, this isn't me. I'm not criticizing Cabin. He's been excellent this year.
He's having a great season so far,
He's having a better season than 90% of the roster. Doing everything that's been asked of him and more. And we'll talk about Cabin a little bit down the road. But for now, looking at the grand scheme of things, you know, Davis Schneider has been not too bad.
He's hitting the ball really well, and I think the production is only going to really come for him, like, pretty soon. I think he's been getting a little bit unlucky in terms of a few things. So
Kiermaier,
I see that,
went 3-for-3.
Yes, he had his best game of the year yesterday.
Yeah, so his average is back up to 200, but there's no power at all.
Yeah, zero.
And it's not that there never was, because his OPS was still in the 700s last year, or for most of the season it was. I don't have the final tally, but yeah, KK, I don't know. KK is very shaky to me at this point.
Yeah, still playing great defense, but the team is struggling for offense, which we'll
anyway,
get into. Yeah.
This is a big tangent. Orelvis is hitting well. Let's not talk about the Buffalo Bisons pitching. I would not say that it is going well. a lot of whips are over like 1.2. Yeah. Well, even 1.6.
That'll be a topic for another day.
Let's talk about this series against the Yankees.
Let's do that.
Man, nothing is more frustrating to me when the Toronto Blue Jays beat the crap out of one of their main rivals. But it's only just, because this could have been... There were two games in particular I thought could have been an absolute ass-whipping, and they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one was definitely one of them. It was a 3-1 win. Chris Bassett got the dub. He threw a gem.
He was very, very good, yes.
Very on. He threw 8 different pitches.
Yep, that's Chris Bassett.
he faced off against, what is that
Luis
guy?
Heal.
Luis Heal, who threw 7 walks.
Yeah.
And gave up 3 hits and still escaped 5 innings with
Somebody posted that it was the first time in Major League history that a starting pitcher has had that exact line of, like, 5 innings, 3 hits, 3 earned runs, 7 walks, and 6 strikeouts. So that's
pretty
cool.
It was unbelievable. The Blue Jays went 1-for-10 as a team with runners in scoring position, which is atrocious.
Very bad.
let's talk about the good stuff, though, because I really don't want to, like, look, we already know what the problem is. Let's not belabor the point. Very happy with Kirk in this game. He went 2 for 3 with a run scored and a ribby and a walk. Mm-hmm. Maybe his best game at the plate this year. Maybe?
I think that's fair to say.
But super impressed with the bullpen as well. Throwing zeros. Exactly what you need to see. The scoring was over after the third inning. Really, it was quite a dull game after the third inning.
The bullpen was excellent for both teams.
That's what you like, though. You like to see the game just get shut down. It was barely over 2 hours, and 30,000 people went home, almost 31,000 people went home happy, 3-1 win. I have no notes for it. They really let Heel off the hook, but what are you going
to
do?
Yep, won the game, so we don't have to be hypercritical of that one.
Nope.
Game two, Patrick, was exciting, I guess. So Jays won 5-4. They went up 5-1 after 6. The Yankees kind of clawed their way back into it and made it interesting. In that game, Patrick, you saw another double from Dalton Varsho, who is playing very well of late and, in my opinion, needs to be in the lineup every day. I think they've kind of been cycling the days off between him and Kevin Kiermaier, but I think if any lefty needs a day off, it's probably gonna should be Kiermaier, because you're not losing anything in the field by playing Varsho over KK, and you have way more power potential with Varsho in the lineup. But that's my personal opinion. Yusei Kikuchi, Patrick, was dominant in this game. He pitched 6 very strong innings, struck out 9 New York Yankees. Anthony Volpe had the golden sombrero over 4 with 4 strikeouts in this one. Kikuchi struck out the side, Volpe, Soto, and Judge in the first inning, getting off to a great start. His only blemish was in the second inning when he gave up a couple of runs, but that was it. He cruised through 6 innings with those 9 Ks and only walked 1 batter, which is huge to see for Yusei. On the other hand, the Jays were able to get to Carlos Rodon, Patrick. He only lasted 4 innings. It took him 101 pitches to get through 4. The Jays had 5 hits and 3 runs off of him, worked for him for 4 walks and only struck out 5 times against Rodon.
Him off the hook quite a bit.
Vladdy had a 2-out RBI single off of Rodon, which scored 2 runs, and Bo Bichette also had a 2-out RBI in this game. The Jays, they hit 3-for-13 with runners in scoring position, which is still below 250, but they got the job done in this one. Again, they held the Yankees to 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position.
Are you concerned at all about Trevor Richards' performance after this game? I think he was, like, it wasn't good, but...
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't great. It wasn't ideal, but, I mean, in the end, again, the Jays won. Jordan Romano made his return, Patrick. It was cool to see his intro before the top of the 9th inning again for the first time this season. And then, he actually gave up an earned run in that game, but was able to get out of a jam. It is what it is. Jays got the win. Not a ton of notes there. Kikuchi was great. Great to see Romano back on the mound. Jimmy Garcia, for the second night in a row, was very good. His ERA early on this season, Patrick, sits at 1.04. And that is through 8 appearances, has 11 strikeouts through 8 2/3 innings so far, has only allowed, if I'm looking at this correctly, 2 hits in those 8 2/3 innings. His whip sits at 0.35. So
he's off
to a great start. And his velocity is at an all-time high. So
one thing that I've noticed with Kikuchi is that his control has gotten better with every start.
Yes.
To the point where this one against the Yankees, which is a good lineup. It's the best lineup he has faced this year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, he's faced them twice now, yeah.
Yeah, but the second time, he absolutely diced them.
Yeah, I mean, the first start against them was also very good. I mean, that was in the Bronx, and he went, 5 1/3 shutout innings and struck out 7 in that one, only giving up 4 hits. So
when Kikuchi's control is on, and it has been on almost since the start of the year. I think he ran into a bit of trouble in the first game.
Yeah, he walked 3 in the very first game, but I mean, that's start of the season, be expected a little bit. But
let me tell you, he has been fantastic.
Yeah. 25 strikeouts to only 5 walks on the season, so 5-1 ratio. We love
that. And we get a second helping of him on Sunday, don't we?
Chris Bassett will start Sunday.
Oh, I'm off by day. Sorry.
Yeah, with the off day. Yeah, Kikuchi will start the first game of the Royals series.
That's probably a good thing because the Royals are good this year, and they kind of need. You know, I hope they enjoy that.
And Kauffman's a bigger ballpark than Petco in San Diego, so a lot harder to hit home runs. So
the Jays are struggling to hit home runs already this year, so it's going to be interesting how it goes at Kauffman. Let's talk about this third game.
Yes.
It's 6-4 loss.
This one sucked.
It doesn't feel good. Let's try to talk about the positives. So for one thing, again, Anthony Volpe 0-for-5. So
yeah, the Jays really held him in check. He came into this series hitting like 400. So
yeah, and he ended up going 1-for-13 during this entire series with 5 strikeouts. And, I'm not saying this just like shit on him because he's a great young shortstop.
He's a great player, yeah. He's having a good start to the season, and the Jays just had the answers.
Yeah, they stifled him. And actually, even Aaron Judge didn't really have a particularly great series either, although he had the dagger in the ninth inning to put the Yankees ahead, 6-4, and that was the final score. But that was the only hit that Aaron Judge had during the entire series, and it just ended up being the one that prevented the sweep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he also went 1-for-13, but he had 2 runs batted in, and he was struck out 7 times. So the Jays are clearly ready to play and compete against the American League East this year. They seem much better prepared from a pitching perspective, from a hitting perspective. This was another very infuriating game, 0-for-8 with runners in scoring position. This easily could have been like an 8-2 game, but there's one particular thing I want to talk about.
Last positive we need to say, Dalton Varsho had 2 home runs on the day, by the way.
Terrific. So. I was very happy with that. Yeah. Kevin Kiermaier 3-for-3 with a walk and a run scored. Really happy to see the bottom of the lineup continue.
And Danny Jansen came back in game 2. We forgot to mention that. So
I love Danny Jansen. Yeah. He can do no wrong.
Good to have him back. Brian Servin went down.
Let's talk about the ninth inning. Let me talk first, though, because this is really... Let's break this down a little bit, because this is what people have been talking about since it happened. Okay? We're going into the ninth. Knowing what we know now, we're going to share all of this because it just makes sense to give context. Okay? Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson are back. They are the guys that we rely on to get those outs in the eighth and ninth inning. So Yenesis Cabrera was good. He was able to get 6 outs, but it left the Jays with very limited options for the ninth inning. Romano was unavailable. Chad Green was unavailable. Nobody knew that until after the fact when John Schneider let us know in the post-game interviews. So that meant that it came down to either Tim Mays or Eric Swanson. John Schneider elected to go with Eric Swanson, which is a decision. And he went out there and he did not look good at all. He did get an out. However, he gave up 3 hits, 3 earned runs, and a home, including a home run. And that was it. The Jays lost the game as a result. Tim Mesa did come out kind of stabilized, but he still coughed up a run. That's it. Game over. Jays lose. Snatching defeat in the jaws of victory. How pissed are you at John Schneider for making that call against the Yankees to bring up Eric Swanson fresh off of some mediocre performances in Buffalo and just put him right into the fire?
Yeah,
to try to knock out the Yankees in the sweep.
In the moment, wasn't a fan of it. Like you said, knowing what we know now, we know that there wasn't really a better option based on who was available and who wasn't.
Yeah.
Eric Swanson, of course, with a track record over the past few seasons of being a very good major league reliever, but it's his first start back. It's the bottom of the ninth. You're facing kind of the Yankees' best hitters, right? Like you have to go face some of the best hitters in their lineup. So it wasn't the best spot. It wasn't the ideal spot you want to use a guy in his first appearance back. Obviously, the Jays gave Romano the save opportunity in game two. And even though he gave up a run, he still got through it. But, I mean, it's tough. I mean, you want to put your guys in positions to succeed and kind of get their confidence building. We saw it with, you know, Tim Meza's couple appearances before, or his previous appearance before yesterday when he had to come in and try and mop up for Swanson and wasn't able to. He was starting to rebound, but then you have to put a guy in a bad position, and, of course, bad things happened. We now know that Chad Green wasn't available. He's dealing with a bit of shoulder fatigue after his Monday appearance against the Yankees. It wasn't enough where they could put him on the injured list. They didn't want to risk losing him for 2 weeks over a bit of shoulder fatigue. Their team is hopeful that he'll be able to go tomorrow night. And if he can't go tomorrow night, then I bet you'll see an IL stint because the Jays will be playing a bunch of games in a row and they will need all hands on deck without an off day coming up.
So I'm going to play...
Yeah, I was mad. Obviously, I maybe would have just put Meza in first. Knowing that he was... I understand, but Meza was coming off of a good outing. And, I mean, between the options of Meza, Bowden Francis, and Eric Swanson coming back into his first game, I likely would have just gone with Tim Meza. Meza hadn't pitched since game one in the series, so it wasn't like he was pitching on back-to-back days. I understand that he was going to be coming up against some tough customers, but he's also a ground ball pitcher, which would have helped, whereas Swanson is a bit more of a fly ball pitcher, and that got them into trouble, obviously. Obviously, the Judge shot down the line was a ground ball, but it was hit in the perfect spot where you couldn't do anything about it. No third baseman is making that play, so can't be mad at the defense there. It's just is what it is. It was a good hitter making a good hit. But I just think that at this point in the season, you're up by two. Yeah, you probably feel pretty confident about Eric Swanson doing okay there, but I would have rather have seen him get into more of a medium to low leverage situation for his first game back. It was one of those classic no-win scenarios, really, for John Schneider, where, I mean, yeah, we'd love to see Swanson come in and just, you know, shut it down, but he didn't. So we have to look back and say, hey, was it the best call? I don't think it was.
Yeah.
It's really tough. Like, I was immediately posting on our Twitter account, like, where is Chad Green? And then, obviously, about 20 minutes after the game, we found out that he was unavailable. So it made as much sense as it could. It just sucks. I mean, this team has had questionable pitching decisions over the last couple of seasons now, going back to Charlie Montoya's days. So it's not like this is a new thing for this organization. And they have a solid enough bullpen right now where they should be able to get out of those situations, but everyone's going to have a bad appearance.
Yep.
Like Tim Meza's had a bunch of stinkers already this year. Yanis Cabrera's been stinky. Trevor Richards has had some stinkers. Like everyone's going to give up runs. Jordan Romano gave up a run in his first appearance back. Like it's relief pitchers are going to give up runs. There's nobody really who finishes the zero ERA who pitches, you know, more than 40 games.
Well, so it happens. This is a good transition opportunity because there is a pitcher who currently has a zero ERA who went from being on this team to going to Buffalo. And it begs the question again, did they rush Eric Swanson back?
I think probably not. I mean, physically they're fine, right? But like just game action wise, they probably could have used both him and Romano probably could have used one more rehab appearance in Buffalo. Both of them didn't have the greatest of appearances down there. I would have loved to see them pitch one more time and, you know, have a good outing to come back off of. I also would have probably options Yanis Cabrera over Nate Pearson based on performance. And then you would have had Nate Pearson's 98-mile-an-hour fastball in the ninth inning instead of having to go to Eric Swanson his first time back. It's tough. I mean, it's hard to make those decisions. Obviously, yeah, Nate's off to a good start, and I would have loved to see them continue to utilize him while he's on. And Nate Pearson, who is pitching really well, is an incredible weapon to have. And I don't agree with them sending him down. Even in hindsight, I think it was a bad move. At the time, I thought it was a weird thing to do, and now I think it's even more weird. I think that I'm glad that they DFA Mitch White, obviously. Like, he was not doing anything. I don't think he's been claimed yet. I haven't seen any news about it, but yeah, it's definitely strange. We're both frantically Googling now. No, nothing yet.
I mean, he was DFA 2 years or
2 days ago.
2 days ago. So here's the other. Okay, so here's the thing. I'm not going to try to gamify the situation so we can talk our way out of blaming John Schneider for this loss. We've said enough that I think I'm comfortable saying, like, you know, he's not the one that went out there and threw the pitches. Yeah, he made the call, but historically he had enough information to think this was the right call, and it ended up being incorrect. I want to talk about looking at what players were available. They could have called up, knowing that Bowden Francis was not going to pitch during the series. They could have optioned him down, elected to keep Nate Pearson as the extra bullpen arm for this series, knowing that it's the Yankees, had him pitch in this game on Wednesday, and then sent him right down, called up Bowden Francis, and then Bowden Francis would be fresh and ready to go the same way he is right now. And the difference is they would have had that extra bullpen arm, and they didn't do that, and it doesn't really cost the team anything. Again, it makes me wonder, to what degree does this team rely on analytics to make decisions like that?
I want to caution. I mean, yes, I do think that is the case, but I think that we're using the analytics as like the boogeyman of
this
team.
It's not, though. It's not.
And
the issue
is truly, I mean, we shouldn't be talking about the ninth inning at all. Like, this, we've already mentioned how inept this team is at hitting with runners in scoring position. And that
with
was,
runners on base at all.
Yeah, runners like 0-for-8 with runners in scoring position in this game, Patrick. I mean, you got Marcus Stroman out of the game after 5 1/3. They were doing a really good job of working counts against him. They had 6 hits and 2 walks off of Stroman, including a home run from Varsho, obviously. But, I mean, then you go in the next inning, you score a couple of runs off of Ferguson out of the bullpen, and then you got nothing really the rest of the way. But they just squandered all those early opportunities where they could have really got Stroman in trouble early, and they didn't. I mean, it's tough when you look back at all of the, like, the missed opportunities that they had early in the game, because they left a ton of guys on base, and yeah, it's frustrating to see just how little this team can perform as soon as anybody gets on the base paths.
We'll talk about this when there's more.
We'll give them the road trip. We'll give them the rest of this month to figure their shit out. And then once that off day comes around, I think on May the 2nd, I believe, is the off day. It's a Thursday. We'll have a full month's worth of data to look at. And, I mean, we're already just over 10% of the way through the season. We're at 19 out of 162, so game 16 was 10%.
Yeah.
So by the time that off day comes around, we'll be like 20% through the season, essentially. Pretty
so
close,
here,
too. So
here we are now. The team is 10-9. Overall in MLB, they're landing pretty much smack dab in the middle, which you would expect from a 500 team. But the thing is, most of the league has 8 wins or more. There's only 5 teams that don't have 8 wins at this point in the season. So it's very tight to start the year. Very few teams have pulled away and have looked to be stronger. Now, some teams are getting hot now, like the Braves are hot, the Mets are hot, the Phillies are heating up, the Orioles are heating up, and the Jays just won 4 in a row before they lost their most recent game. So, I mean, it's so early in the year that some of these teams that got off to like a strong start, like
wait. City, you're telling me it's early?
It is early. Anyway, that being said, it's nice to have a day for the Jays to have a day off.
Yeah.
Where they can reset and be ready for San Diego. They are 11-10, so they have played two more games than the Jays. We have the better record than they do. However, the run differential is about 29 runs in San Diego's favor, which is a reflection of how good they are at scoring runs. But their pitching has kind of let them down in a couple of clutch situations. So let's preview the Padres. These games are all relatively early starts, or at least it's not terrible. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the Padres.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Padres, as you mentioned, are off to a better start scoring runs than the Blue Jays are. But, yeah, record-wise, they're very similar. Game one's going to see Yariel Rodriguez, who made his Blue Jays debut last weekend, up against Matt Waldron, who is a right-handed pitcher for the San Diego Padres. If we look into his numbers, this is a guy I've never really heard of before, and I'm not surprised because he's only ever appeared in 11 games at the big league level. He was drafted by the Cleveland Indians way back in 2019, Patrick. 550th overall in the draft, so he made the long climb to the show. First appeared at the Padres last year, 8 games, 6 starts, over 41 innings. He had a 4.35 ERA last year. Not a huge strikeout guy, well below a strikeout per inning. He will give up some hits. He gave up 9 home runs in those 8 appearances last year. This year so far, he's off to a relatively solid start, Patrick. He's made 3 starts so far this season against the Cardinals, the Giants, and the Dodgers. Hasn't pitched more than 5 1/3, but has an ERA so far this season of 4.04, and he gave up 4 of his earned runs in the first start and has only given up 1 over his last 10 1/3, so he's pitching a lot better than he did in his first time out. I don't really have too much data on him just because he doesn't have a ton of innings. So it's really tough to say what to expect. But, I mean, the Jays always seem to be baffled by these type of guys who are, you know, not a lot of info on them. And they kind of just stumble against guys like him. So I'm a little bit nervous. I am excited to see what Rodriguez can do in his second appearance. I really liked what he brought in the first time out. You're going to like Matt Waldron, Patrick, because he throws a knuckleball. I'll say that. He throws a knuckleball 36% of the time. So it could be a fun one. He's got the kitchen sink approach. His fastball's only 91 miles per hour. So he's not a velo guy. He's a junker.
I love that.
So.
I don't love that for the hitters who are already.
Yeah, and you won't be watching the game because the game starts at 9:40 p.m. Eastern time, which is like 11 p.m. for Patrick. So
I will already be asleep.
Yeah, it's late for me, and that's I find games that start on the West Coast 7:40 local start time for me, but it's still pretty.
Actually, it's 10:40 p.m. for me.
Yeah, so 10:40 p.m.
And that's not atrocious for a Friday night, but. Yeah. I might watch it because it's Friday, but then
fair.
There's some Formula One racing happening at midnight, I think it is. So, yeah, I might check that out. So I might watch that game. Game 2, Jose Barrios versus TBD.
TBD, everyone's favorite. And no idea who's going to slot in there for the Padres.
Barrios is slicing. He has been fantastic. Let's talk about Jose Barrios.
He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball so far this season and not getting much respect yet. So
it's coming.
It better be.
It's coming.
Yeah.
He's been tremendous. I think he's the guy I have the most confidence in right now, I think.
I would say so, yeah.
It's him and Kikuchi have been terrific.
Yeah, and I'm Bassett's quickly climbing his way back into that confidence.
Bassett has the ability to give them more than 6 innings routinely, which is very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Barrios, I mean, I expect 6 innings, high strikeouts. The slurve is unhittable, yada, yada, yada. We talked about it a million times. TBD, it's impossible to preview. So let's talk about game 3. Chris Bassett up against Joe Musgrove.
That's a fun one. Joe Musgrove is fun to watch. We don't get to see him much as Jays fans, obviously due to broadcasting or whatever, but he's not off to the best start this season, Patrick.
Yeah, he's good, though.
Yeah, he's very good. Last, so two seasons ago, 2022, he pitched in 30 games with a 2.93 ERA. Last year, limited by injury, only pitched in 17 games, but the ERA was still 3.05. He still went 10-3 on the win-loss last year, so we know he keeps his team in the games. He'll strike out about a batter per inning. This season so far, Patrick, he has made five appearances already, actually, five starts. This will be his sixth appearance for the Padres, and there have been a couple of decent ones and a couple of not-so-great ones. His first start was when they were playing in Seoul, South Korea, which is why he has an extra start against the Dodgers. It seems like there was no good pitching in that series, but he gave up five runs to the Dodgers. His last three appearances have been better against the Cardinals. He had one run over six innings. Then they played the Cubbies, where he gave up four runs over four innings. And then the next time out was against Milwaukee, where he gave up three runs over six innings. He's given up three home runs in those five starts so far this year, and he's actually walking more batters than he usually does. He walked four his last time out to only three strikeouts, and three the time before to only five strikeouts. So he's definitely got some command issues. And again, he's not another guy who's going to blow you away. His four seamer that he only uses 20% of the time is going to only top out at 92. Is his average? Excuse me. So he'll top out 93-94. But he throws a slider and a curveball most of the time. His four main pitches that he kind of throws pretty evenly: slider, curveball, four-seamer, and a cutter. So another kitchen sink guy, also mixes in a changeup and sinker. He's another one of these guys, Patrick, who we're seeing throwing the fastball a lot less. If you even go back and look at 2 years ago, he was throwing the fastball the most at 25% of the time. Last year, the fastball and the curveball were both at 24%, and now the fastball has fallen further down to 20%, and he's throwing his slider more than his curveball. So he's changed up his pitch mix a little bit in terms of distribution, but another guy who's got good stuff, typically a good locator, so the Jays could be in tough against Musgrove on Sunday.
I feel like the Padres are a team that should be better, but their pitching has really let them down.
Yeah, they're kind of the opposite of the Blue Jays. They've been scoring a ton of runs, but they've also been giving them up. Whereas the Jays, outside of a couple games where they've got shellacked, like Colorado, when it's 12-4, their pitching has been very good and holding them in games. But as we talked about, the struggle has been to get runners in. It's looking like the Padres may use Randy Vasquez on Saturday, Patrick. He's in their AAA system right now. He pitched with the Yankees in 11 games last year and made five starts for them. He's been around AAA for a while. He's 25 years old. Yankee draft pick originally. I think they got him in the Soto deal from New York. So, yeah, it looks like that was the case. He gives up a fair amount of home runs and walks quite a few guys too. So we'll watch for that.
Good pitching team playing a good hitting team.
Yeah.
One of those things has to give, because obviously one of these two teams must win the game.
Yeah, there's going to be interesting to see how it goes. I'm just looking at...
could be what the doctor ordered for this team when it comes to runners in scoring position.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Padres' kind of offensive numbers right now. It's the usual suspect that you expect. Fernando Tatis Jr. has been worth 0.9 F4 already through the first 21 games. He's off to a good start, 148 WRC+. Jerickson Profar, who took a really long time to develop into a very good Major League Baseball player, is also performing really well. He's 31 years old, and it seems like he's been around forever at this point. But he's off to a good start too. He's hitting .299 right now at the 152 WRC+. And then Jackson Merrill, who is one of their young up-and-comers that the Padres have been waiting on for a couple years here. He was drafted by them in 2021. He's only 20 years old, Patrick. His birthday he will turn 21 tomorrow. His birthday is tomorrow. Yeah, the 19th, excuse me. So he'll be 21 tomorrow. But he's off to a good start as well, hitting .333 through his first 74 plate appearances.
How's Manny doing?
Manny Machado, Patrick, he is off to not a great start. He's hitting .262, but he's not hitting... Actually, he's off to a better start than he was last year. Excuse me. Sorry, I was looking at the wrong line in my sheet here. But yeah, he's up to a better start this year. Four home runs, hitting .262. With a 118 WRC plus, but his defense has started to decline a little bit the past couple of years at third base. What was once one of the best third basemen in baseball, he's seeing a little bit of a dip. Still a positive value defender the last couple of seasons, but nowhere near where he was at one point. He's looking to rebound. He was not great last year. He's really seen his batting average fall off the last couple of seasons, and the power has slowly started to slip for him as well, but we'll see if he can rebound.
Well, let's talk about the X factors. For me, for San Diego, I think it is Manny Machado. I think this is his, like, opportunity.
Yeah, he's very familiar with the Blue Jays organization, not so much with the current pitchers that he'll see, especially Rodriguez, obviously. But
he's played against them before.
He's definitely played against Berríos a lot. So,
the numbers... Some of our hitters are coming off of good series against the Yankees. Guerrero, Bichette, Varsho, even Kevin Kiermaier, and Alejandro Kirk. But my X factor for the San Diego series is going to be a bottom of the order guy. And it's going to be Kevin Biggio. Kevin Biggio did not have a good series against the Yankees. However, he is off to a strong start to the year. I think he's hitting .292 to start.
Yep.
He's getting plenty of plate appearances, which is not something he's used to having happen. But as long as he's in the bottom part of the order, I feel more comfortable with the guys at the top of the order getting more opportunities. And Lord knows they need it because they are really struggling right now, especially with runners in scoring position. But George Springer does not look like himself. Even Vladdy and Bo, while they're coming off of good series, they're still, the power is just not there. This team is not even remotely close to what I was thinking they would do with power. So I'm calling it now, Cavan and Manny Machado. What do you got?
Mine will be Jerks and Profar for the Padres. And I'm going with a guy for the Blue Jays who is very familiar with the Padres, Justin Turner. Longtime LA Dodger, has played a lot of games in San Diego. And probably, I haven't looked at the numbers, but I'm guessing probably has pretty good career numbers against the Padres. And he'll be a guy who has seen Joe Musgrove quite a bit. So I'll look for him, especially on Sunday, to play really well. But I think Justin Turner will be my X factor. And he didn't have the best series against the Yankees either. He was struggling a little bit more than we've seen the first little bit of the season. But I'll look for him to, you know, keep the strong start going and against a team he's very familiar with.
Any concerns at all about the pen going into this series?
It's really going to depend on whether or not Chad Green is good to go for tomorrow. Obviously, if he's not, you put him on the IL and you recall Nate. But I think I feel a lot better about it now that the Jays have had the off day and everyone's going in fresh. There's a long stretch of games here, folks, before another off day. So you may end up seeing a little bit of shuffling in the bullpen, depending on how Rodriguez goes tomorrow. If they don't use Bowden Francis, or maybe if they do use Bowden Francis, you can send them down for a few days, you know, and at least bring somebody up who's going to be ready to pitch the next day. They've got 13 games in a row here starting tomorrow. So it's 2 weeks, and maybe Bowden Francis only pitches two or three times during that stretch, maybe twice if he's only pitching behind Rodriguez. So, I mean, you don't have to keep him around if that's the case.
Yeah, at some point it begs the question, right? They had that spot. They had Bowden Francis sitting on the bench doing nothing.
Yeah.
When they could have had Nate Pierce. It
was interesting. I think the reason that they may have kept Bowden around was, you know, obviously in the event that one of your starters doesn't do well. But the Jays starters all gave them, you know, minimum five innings. Even like Gausman was not his best, but he was way better than he was the last couple of times against the Yankees. So I think they probably just kept Bowden around for that potential usage. But I mean, I'm not one of those people who likes to plan for the negative, and in this case, keeping Bowden Francis was in case of emergency kind of thing. Like, he's kind of like the fire axe in this situation.
Break glass
in case of emergency. And you didn't have to, because your only really emergency was the top of the ninth inning on Sunday. So,
well,
you weren't going to break the glass there.
Fair enough. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I think I'm excited. I can't remember the last time the Jays were in San Diego. So it'll be cool. We don't get to see these National League ballparks very often. We'll get to see them every 2 years now, which is awesome with the new scheduling format. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm curious. I'm excited to watch players that we don't get to see often with the Padres. So it'll be cool to see Tatis on TV. I'm looking forward to seeing our old foe Manny Machado again and see if the Jays can shut him down, because he always was a thorn in the Jays side when he was at Baltimore. So I'm just excited to watch a ball game against a team that we don't get to see very often. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
I will say I'm a big fan of Petco Park.
Very cool looking stadium.
I love it. It featured pretty prominently in that TV show a couple years ago with the woman who made the Padres. It was called Pitch, I think.
Okay, I've never
Why
seen
are you
it.
Laughing?
I just because you were kind of like stumbling to find the I haven't seen it before, so
I was like trying to think.
I have no idea what you're talking about, so.
Okay, well,
I've never heard of this show.
What it's called Pitch. It had the guy who played Zach Morris was in it.
I don't know who that is either. Who's Zach Morris?
Mark Paul, Zach Morris from fucking Saved by the Bell.
Oh, I never watched that. That's before my time,
oh,
my friend.
Oh my God.
You're dating yourself.
I am 150 years old. No, the TV show was called Pitch. It came out in 2016. It was only on for 1 year, which is really sad, because like I didn't realize that, and like I started watching it, and then I found out it was canceled. Anyway, whatever. Anyway, it was fine. It was a decent show, but it just didn't have the writing just wasn't strong enough.
Fair.
But the pitcher that was featured in it, her name was Ginny Baker. She had a screwball pitch. That's what I remember from the show.
That's
but
what
anyway,
I liked it. Screwball.
Yeah, exactly.
Great pitch.
But yeah, Petco Park was pretty well featured in that show. That's where I've seen the most of it.
Interesting.
Cause,
cool.
Because the Jays just don't play in Petco very often.
Yeah.
But I love it. I remember when I first started getting MLB TV back in like 2014, 2015, 2016, like around that time. I would watch in the afternoons. I would watch a lot of the Padre getaway games. That was when they were like garbage. They didn't have Machado. They didn't have Tatis. They didn't have anybody. And there was like 600 people in the stands. It was pathetic. It was bad. Those are bad days. But San Diego, they're a lot better than what they've been. And I expect them to perform a lot better this year than they did last year. I don't think they're going to be a 500 team. I think they'll compete for a wild card spot.
For sure.
But certainly not if Yu Darvish is down for longer than a few starts and Joe Musgrove can't get it going. It's a lot of money to pay these guys and to have them struggle. But anyway, that's my final thought.
Yeah, no, looking forward to seeing it. It should be fun. We'll be back Sunday evening, as the game on Sunday is a 4:10 Eastern start. So we'll record basically as soon as that game is done. So you'll see an episode from us late Sunday night or early Monday morning, depending where you are. And then we'll see how the series against the Royals goes. But we'll talk about that more on Sunday. In the meantime, thanks for listening to the episode. You can find us anywhere you get your podcast by searching for BFMD Podcast. Thanks everybody for sticking around. And we'll hopefully see you on Sunday.